Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. If you enjoy a determiner, let's talk about the credits. The song written, composed, and sang by Mike Rickberg with his wife now. She wasn't when we first started 19 years ago, Sarah Cohen. That's right. Patrick Brady is doing all the tech. He does the audio and the video, and he puts it all together, and he's awesome. Vilmos is doing JackieCationStore.com, and thank you very much, Vilmos. The rest of it's on Squarespace, including DorkForest.com and TheDorkForest.com, which I just integrated into JackieCation.com. Also there, merch. There's Dork Forest t-shirts. There's all my stand-up merch, a new t-shirt and beanies, and also CDs and DVDs. If you own those devices, feel free to empty my garage. You knock yourselves out. You can see videos of different stand-up shows that I've done on the television, and you can watch a couple of my specials. Always fun. I have another podcast, The Jackie and Laurie Show, just about stand-up, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 19th year, we're doing it. You can go to my Bandcamp. You can go to YouTube, where the videos of The Dork Forest are all hanging out, and there's a bunch of stand-up stuff as well. It is November or December of 2024, so I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest in these 2 months. Instead, you find a food bank in your town near to you and help out somebody in November and December. You can use feedingamerica.org, or you can Google the words food bank and your zip code, and a food bank will come up. I'm sure there's other things that I should be talking about. Come and see me do stand-up in November and December. Holy smokes, I'm everywhere. And JackieCation.com has all those tour dates. But who's going to dork out? Let's find out now. It's me, Jackie Cation. I am actually in what is now our guest room. Used to be the mama room. And doing live Dork Forest. Not live. I'm alive. And my guest is alive. But these are pre-recorded. DorkForest.com and all that. JackieCation.com. The weird WordPress is still up there. Trying to figure out how to delete my WordPress. Can't figure it out. In other news that doesn't have anything to do, why don't I get into the hi? My guest today is Erin Judge. She's a stand-up comic. She runs a show at The Ripped Bodice, which is a romantic romance novel brick and mortar store in Culver City. If I'm correct,
that's correct.
Has a new album out that's wherever you get albums. So feel free to buy it. You can also stream it, but you know what? 10 bucks is 10 bucks. Feel free to buy it. It's called It's Romantic Comedy, Live at the Ripped Bodice. And it's you, Erin Judge, and Jenny Chalikian. Is that right?
Chalikian, yeah.
Yep. And welcome to the program, The Dork Forest, Erin Judge.
Thank you so much, Jackie. It's my honor to be here once again. I did an episode a few years ago.
Right,
where we talked about Sex and the City.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yeah, we had an interesting conversation. And then I read the comments after, and a lot of the people said that my favorite episode of Sex and the City was either their or their loved one's favorite episode as well. So
people, I think we have more in common than we think. It's weird.
It's true.
Right. Today, you're going to talk about Chef, entrepreneur, and television personality, Ina Garten?
Ina Garten, yes, a.k.a. the Barefoot Contessa.
A.k.a. the Barefoot Contessa, who I like. I like her better than Lydia on PBS.
Oh,
The Italian Contessa or whatever. Though she does do kind of a... there's a good show on PBS that I like, actually, with Lydia on it. But Ina Garten, I like her. I have so many opinions about Ina Garten. You talk to me about Ina Garten.
I do too. I have a lot of opinions, but lately she's been very comforting to me. And I think that there's also just been a little bit of a fascination I've had with her because she put out this memoir this year that I read.
Okay.
And she revealed a lot about herself and her childhood, which is that it was really an unhappy childhood. And
that's interesting.
Parents were quite inadequate as parents. So it was one of these situations where
that's a really good way of putting it.
She had a really good, like, on paper upbringing where her dad was a doctor and her mother was a nutritionist. But apparently her father was violent and abusive and was very, very verbally abusive and also physically abusive, but seems like the verbal abuse made a bigger impression. And the mother was apparently just cold as ice, could not have a feeling to save her life. And she also was a nutritionist and would not allow any good food in the house. They were not allowed to have carbohydrates in the house.
Wow. And she is 70 if she's a day in a garden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so this is no carbs 60 years ago, which is what, 1965?
Right. So she's talking like canned tuna with nothing and, you know, boiled vegetables and like getting that kind of stuff in her lunch as a child. Never allowed to have not just sweets, but like no rice, no pasta, no bread.
Right. Which is weird. Okay. Okay. Was she an only child, Anna Garten?
She had a brother, and she talks at one point in the book, later in the book, about how she and her brother have tried to like figure it out, and they've both had some therapy, and I guess they both decided not to have children of their own because of their childhood.
Oh, but really?
But then later in life, her brother ended up having a child quite late in life. So she talks about that as well. But she's just so candid in this memoir. And I think it was very unexpected for everybody who's kind of been following her, especially to hear that her home life was so devoid of any kind of like celebration, hosting,
joy,
pleasure, joy, food.
Right.
You know,
I mean, and the thing is she is not, you know, she's not a pointy lady. She is a normal sized lady who is now. And her relationship with her husband, Jeffrey, I believe is his name, does seem lovely.
You know, I was going to talk about that because I don't know if you know this, but I have a very nerdy husband who gets kind of roped into my media empire from time to time against his will. You have a nerdy husband.
Who wants in. He wants in, though. He couldn't be happier to do a cameo with the animatronic Grinch that we were given by my sister-in-law that I'm going to give to Maria Bamford today in the hopes that she takes it to various different businesses and shoots videos with it. Anyway.
I think that sounds like the best plan for the Grinch.
Me too. Mm.
But Ina's husband, he might be more like mine because he is roped in. He is a character on her television show.
Yes.
And the whole time he was the extremely nerdy dean of Yale Business School.
Oh, wait. That was his job?
Yeah. Like straight up. And he still is a professor at Yale. And he was like an economist for the Ford administration.
Well,
and
because
like,
you look at them and you know that they are fabulously wealthy. Waspy Hamptons.
They're not waspy. They're Jewish.
They're Jewish. But the thing is there are some people that are so Jewish, they're waspy.
Well, and they always have sweaters tied around their necks.
It's exactly.
Like 100% of the time.
It is like the Armenians who have gone so far from their sweatpants and their sweat tracksuits and their gold to then just, they have money, but they don't want to show you they have money. You know, it's just, it's this Armenian thing that I also see in other ancestries, shall we say. Not just the Jewish peoples, also the Irish peoples and the Italians. Sure. And it doesn't matter. You know why? Because humanity is full of ridiculousness.
It's
true. But the Hamptons,
you can tell that
they are some shiny, shiny bastards that have been tossed in a rock tumbler with those sweaters.
So I have a good friend who is a psychologist in Santa Monica. And she is like, even though I am a highly paid professional in Santa Monica, I am still the help. And Ina Garten, when she bought the Barefoot Contessa, which was the name of the store she bought, it was already the name. She was going to change the name of the store. She decided not to change the name of the store. She decided to lean in. It's some kind of allusion to a film that was from like maybe a silent film, like an early 20th century movie. Maybe it was later than that, but anyway, it's a movie. And she was like, okay, this other lady who owned the specialty food store,
we're just gonna leave,
sold it to me.
Yeah,
you know, so then she became the Barefoot Contessa. But she basically moved to the Hamptons and worked her butt off for like 30 years, 20 hours a day, learning everything, because she was not a trained chef. She was not trained in food. She just loved it. And she hated writing policy papers for the White House, which is what she was doing before.
Mm-hmm. Which president?
Ford.
So that's how she met Jeffrey?
No, she met Jeffrey. This is interesting. I'm so glad I read this memoir. She met Jeffrey when she was in high school, and her older brother went to Dartmouth.
Okay.
And Jeffrey was at Dartmouth, and he saw her through a window and fell in love with her.
Through a window.
Chubby little Ina Garten. I love this story. She like had blue shoes on that she chose herself. And he was like, that's the girl for me. And he had to screw up the courage to talk to her.
Okay. Well, that's adorable. And so they got together. When did they marry? Relatively early?
They were 20 like when years she was, old. She was 21 or 22 and she was 20.
And okay, so he was like 22 and she was 20 and they just got married. And she was like, I want out of this house with the cuckoo bears.
Well, she went away to college. She was like middle class. She went away to college. I think she was at Syracuse.
Okay.
And, you know, they would like figure out how to get between New Hampshire and Syracuse.
Sure.
Sounds well, that's snowy. Not. Yeah.
Yes. It sounds fraught with peril in February. And, but other than that, just fine. And so then they married and, so she was working, essentially, she just got a job writing papers, or he had the work and he hired her, or?
No. There's even more of like an insane thing where like he was a military brat, Jeffrey was.
Okay.
Kind of where like his father was like a secret agent. Like there's something weird about, but like in the military, he was some kind of like, he was like a spy.
Okay.
But so Jeffrey, at some point during his time at Dartmouth, his dad got sick and he was like, I need to make money in order to, you know, stay in school. He enlisted during Vietnam. He joined ROTC.
Okay.
So she is, you know, and this was like a big thing because like they were both a pretty progressive liberal colleges, and his fraternity brothers asked him to walk in and out through the back door so nobody would see that there was somebody in military dress coming in and out of their fraternity.
Ah, because he was in uniform.
Yeah. And so, you know, they were already in this like situation where they were like, just kind of, they were unafraid to be different in really key and interesting ways, but kind of weirdly conservative ways too. But he ended up having some sort of military career and she had to finish college. So she was in Syracuse after they married and like back and forth with her parents' house. They ended up in DC.
Okay.
I think he was going to go to Johns Hopkins or something. And so he was getting his like doctorate and like she was there. And so she's like, I have a college degree. I'll go write nuclear policy papers for the White House.
Okay. Interesting. So so that's the mid 70s. Ford is, the war's over. He's working for Gerald Ford in what position?
Well, I think he might've been in grad school and she was the one working for Ford, but they were in DC doing DC things. They were hanging out with like government folks.
And they were Republicans, but old school Republicans.
She never really said. She never really said if they were Democrats or Republicans in the
book.
Well,
let me ask you something. If you're working for Gerald Ford, you're probably a Republican.
He ended up in the Clinton White House too, though, which I know that they're like the most Republican-y Democrats in the many ways.
All Democrats are Republican-y when we look at the spectrum of where the Democrats and the Republicans, I mean, the Republicans are now lizard people. It's like they've even jumped billionaires. I heard somebody did what the hell was her name last night? She had a premise. Poteet? The hell was her first name? Ashley? I feel bad because that was her premise and now I have to look it up or I'm a bad person. So know in your hearts that, I'm going to find her name. So her name is Alyssa Poteet, P-O-T-E-E-T. You run into her?
No, I have not, but I can't wait to hear this premise.
So the premise was that that there's Republicans who are Nazis, And then there's these other people who were kind of hippy skippy, but they're conspiracy theorists. And some reason, they jump over billionaires and go to lizard people. Yeah. And they're like, the Democrats aren't the bad guys aren't billionaires. The bad guys are actually Democrats who aren't actually human. They're aliens.
Yes. Yes.
And are lizard people. And
yes,
they genuinely believe it. And yes, she went off on this whole thing. She was like, so my uncle is just a Nazi. My aunt actually is like a yoga instructor who jumped over billionaires and is trying to tell me that chemtrails have created. And she's like, I don't even know where to go with these people.
Yeah. No, it's the convergence of the you know, anti-vax, like I'm scared of the chemicals in my food, hippy dippy types. But the unifying thing of the conspiracy stuff is very real. And there are a lot of people entering power right now who are that, first of all, they're engaged in flagrant conspiracy, like in front of our faces. They're working together to break crimes. That's or to break the law and commit crimes. That's
right.
Inspiring. But they're also happy to play off of this. Like, oh, yeah, those people.
Oh, yeah.
We're us guys over here. Like, we're the good guys.
Right. And
I think it's
a lot. Let's just say it out loud, you guys. We know it's a lot. And that's why the Dork Forest, we could talk about Ina Garten, and then you could try to help the person in front of you, because you probably can't stop a billionaire yourself. So just ripple effect, my friend.
That's the thing about these folks, though. Like part of what is interesting, and I think the reason that people are kind of gravitating towards Ina Garten right now, not just because she put out a very honest memoir, where she also talks about how she and Jeffrey separated at one point, which is very fascinating.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. But like, I think that, you know, she's like, how do we gather? How do we come together? How do we get together? I think people are nostalgic for like low toxicity gatherings.
Oh, yeah.
My ad. I'm about to do an ad. Rangers, this is an ad for the Masterclass streaming app. Program possibilities. You gotta love that. I like Masterclass. Masterclass is a streaming platform, and you get to learn on that streaming platform by taking essentially classes with people who are really good at what they do. For example, the RuPaul episode was hilarious and awesome because RuPaul is fabulous. And I want to watch RuPaul do whatever RuPaul would like to do. And I learned how to have pretty hands. And so that was super fun for me. But there's all kinds. There's over 200 classes that you can watch, listen to, streaming, obviously, on any platform. And it makes an excellent gift. I may give it to my sister, Darla, who may or may not be listening to this. But she, you know, it's just fun. It's a gift that it's always on time, and it will last a lifetime, and you can't do better than Masterclass. It's the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 of the world's best. That's why Wirecutter called it an invaluable gift, and it's the gift of unlimited learning because you can watch them over and over again. Learn from any Masterclass instructor anywhere on your smartphone, computer, TV, even in audio mode, which is great, and RuPaul's super fun. You could do Noam Chomsky or Bill Nye, and that's exciting. They make a difference, is what I'm saying. 88% of members feel that Masterclass made a positive impact on their lives. So I feel a positive impact of learning how to put my hands nice and make them look pretty. And there's no risk. Every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So give your loved ones a year of learning with Masterclass. How do you do that? You go to masterclass.com/dork, D-O-R-K, for the current offer. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays and sometimes as much as 50% off. So that's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/dork. Masterclass.com/dork. Let's get back into the show.
And just being able
yesterday to... was Thanksgiving. We are recording this the day after Thanksgiving. And we all got a text message saying we will not be discussing it.
Oh, really?
Yes, because there was one bad guy, and then there was just not bad guys, but two button pusher guys.
Oh, man.
Who are lefty button pusher guys for no reason, except for that they love to push buttons.
Yeah.
But We're trying to just have right. a nice gathering. So yes. why don't you discuss how much you enjoyed that tour you took of the Mississippi?
Right. Sure. Yes.
Up to northern Minnesota. How about that?
Yeah.
Why don't you just wrap it up? Chop, chop.
Yeah. So I think that part of the reason I've been doing a rewatch of her show at this time is because she's chill. And she's like, here's how you make people happy. Here's how you entertain them. There's a chillness to her that I think that every other food celebrity seems uptight compared to her. And like, I think that her
and
image,
she clearly loves every, and she has a diverse friend sort of palette, right? Like her guests and friends are often just sort of, I mean, it's not, sometimes it's young gay men and then sometimes it's older gay men, if I remember correctly. And they're usually white.
The gays she's feeding are of various ages, but I think that it is a super white show. Like when I watch it, I'm just like, wow, there's everyone is white. And it's really, it's, you know, I grew up in New York and then I lived in Texas and then I lived in Massachusetts, which is like a pretty white place, but I was like always around college campuses. And so those are just inherently diverse. And then being in California, it's like it is so weird when everyone's white, unless you're like in Pasadena. At like some sort of
and not even there. You got to go to Altadena. Just keep going a little further east, a little further north. The white
Call
flight,
the snow.
Yes,
and white flight out of Pasadena. Dang,
it's but yes, it is. And then the diversity is much more interesting than not. But Ina Garten does the food she makes is actually. And it's so interesting that he was the head of the business department at Yale.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the food she makes is like, she makes it for entertaining. So she'll be like, I'm making me and Jeffrey, pavlovas for his birthday. And then she'll be like, first bake 2-pound cakes.
There's just the two of you. Did you remember that?
she cooks like a caterer. And like, it takes several episodes before you like really like it sinks in that like she's not using the regular Le Creuset Dutch oven. She's using like the quintuple size one. And like, that's a lot of lentil soup in there.
Yeah. So is she feeding the staff as well?
She must be. And then there's the whole staff. One of the things that like, as you're following the breadcrumb trail of Ina Garten, it starts to make me feel for her, especially now that I know her life story is like, it feels like a lot of the relationships in her life are kind of business relationships. You know what I mean? Like all of her friends are like, oh, this is my friend. She's also my assistant and she's on my payroll. And like, this is my friend and he's a film director and I'm putting him in my TV show. And then I'm going to plug his movie in my, you know, and like, it just feels like there's that layer of transactionality. And as much as she really is like, I just love my friends and I'm just this loving person. When you know her backstory as being told by her father, no one will ever love you. Wow. It makes you concerned that she's like, feels like she has to be doing something for people in order to have love.
Make them like her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think we all have that to some extent where you're just like, I'm going to buy you gifts. And then you realize, I'm 100 years old. So, I mean, the fact that I'm still struggling with this idea that I'm not enough, that whatever I'm doing is never, and I don't think I'm alone. I think that everybody has it to some extent. And I mean, I don't know anybody my father, that's about it. He's pretty sure that he's enough. I told him he looked good the other day and he goes, I always look good. And I'm like,
your
really?
Father though. Yeah. But your father is also like, I think he does from the stories that you've told. I think that he thinks that he's enough. That's not the calculus of his mindset about himself, but he is tuned in to everyone else. Like he's super attuned to everyone and is always trying to like crack the code.
He is a crack the code guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that you are correct. He is interested in how, and to some extent he uses his powers for good. And other times he's just poking the bear. In the hopes that he gets some sort of reaction. And you're like, he said to me the other day, he was like, you know, I saw that clip that you posted where you said I was a bigot. Remember that? And I said, yeah, I didn't know you'd see that. Oh, good for you. And and he goes, well, you know, the building I live in, I'm almost one of the only white guys. I'm a minority. And I said, yes, but when you were a child of Armenian immigrants, you weren't considered white, you told me. And he goes, that's right. And I said, so congratulations on passing for white 70 years later. And
wow.
And then we stopped talking about it. And then I looked at the clip later and I was like, no, I'm right. That he was a jackass. And I was, he must, I said, and I did say this, I said, the reason I posted that is you must have said something that irritated me again. And oh, I had a clip that happened to be a day when you had irritated, because it isn't a bit I'm doing. It was just a riff that I did at some club.
Right.
That, of course, had been filmed because everything is. And then I needed a clip. And I was like, yeah. I didn't think he'd see it because I sometimes with the clips that I don't particularly want him to see, I don't forward it to Facebook. And my Facebook is actually, I don't have, I'm locked out of my Facebook right now.
Oh, Jackie, between the WordPress and the Facebook, what's going on?
I don't know. But I can't get into my pro page or my personal page or my DMs or Meta, which is the business suite, so that I can do ads. But ads are still running on my old reels because they just sent me $111. So I would like to get back in, though, because I have to advertise upcoming shows. Where am I going to be next week? Oh, Chicago. Wait, no. Yeah, I think it'll be Chicago and then Michigan, Grand Rapids. So go to JackieKesha.com, you guys. Anyway.
So, yeah, I mean, I would say, can you get in through Instagram?
Instagram and Threads are okay. But
well,
for some
Instagram
reason,
should be able to let you into Facebook.
It doesn't.
You got to noodle on in there. Oh, no?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I've got I got somebody looking into it. I've completely hijacked your dorkdom. Let's go back and talk a little bit about when did they separate? I did not know they separated.
Oh, so this was like, and I guess Ina, you know, she's been on a book tour. So she's like, everybody wants to talk about this part. But also it's like, yeah, of course they do. Because everybody's like, you guys have a perfect life and a perfect wedding and a perfect marriage.
And it can't be, right?
No, of course not. So she basically, it was a very 80s kind of story. Like she became passionate about her career. And she really felt like in her marriage, it was always assumed that even though her career was like significant and booming and successful, that it did not matter as much as his, that it was just not, it was like a hobby. And his career was the real career in the marriage, and that he was never going to like make compromises or like do stuff that was what, you know, is considered sort of like household work, family work, kin work, like that kind of stuff that falls
women's
to women.
Work kind of stuff.
Work.
Okay. Yeah.
The unspoken logistics and, you know, getting the dog to the vet type stuff.
Okay.
So I think, you know, because they didn't have any kids. So like that changes the dynamics around that a little bit, but, you know,
it should simplify it, but it still exists. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. Exactly. And just the vibe, right? Like he's like, well, I'm going to go like live in Tokyo for a while or, you know, like, and just the expectations about what she would do. And I think that like, it was more about a communication issue because they were already kind of living separately and like comporting themselves in separate business arenas.
Because he was wherever Yale is.
Well, he was still in DC at the time, I think.
Okay.
And then there was like a New York City time and she's in the Hamptons, but I think that they were splitting time between the Hamptons and DC, which sucks. Like that's a sucky commute.
That's a weird drive. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they worked hard. They had like a hard life. When I was in New York, my husband had a job in Ithaca. So I was New York City. Ithaca was 4 hours away. And
Ithaca is where Yale is, isn't it? Or Cornell?
Ithaca is Cornell.
Okay.
Yale's in New Haven. So Yale is halfway between Boston and New York.
Okay. That's right.
So I was just like back and forth in New York City. I was doing the drive to Ithaca from New York constantly. I was like back and forth all the time. And it was really, really hard, even though we were close and we didn't have kids. And it was just really difficult. It was way harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
To be like part-timing separate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's insane. So it happened in the '80s. When did her show start, her first show? When did she buy the Barefoot Contessa? 70s? Okay.
Yes. So she bought the Barefoot Contessa a good 25 years before her first show. So her first Food Network show was like in the early part of the 20th century, like 2000.
21st. Okay.
21st. Yes. No, it was not. It was not a radio program in like 1907. But she
has just fire and the, one of those things that spins.
Anna Garden's rotisserie program. So no, Martha Stewart like was like, hey, Ina Garten's cool. And so she was already in the like Food Network realm. And everybody knew who she was in the sort of up and coming food celebrity community because she had this like hot store in the Hamptons and she was a caterer.
Okay.
But she gets a Food Network show and she's like, everybody's in my tiny kitchen. People are like putting lights in my face. Everything's terrible. And I think it was her kitchen, but maybe you might have to fact check me on that. But right. Whatever the case may be. At one point she takes a bite of the food.
Right.
And she's like, it's delicious because she's tasting it. And the director is like, that is horrifying. Why would you ever put food in your mouth? That's disgusting. Nobody wants to see you eat. And she was like, okay. And this TV thing is not for me. So they were like, I guess I'm not she's not a TV celebrity. So then 8 years later, 10 years later, they like give it another go. And she's gotten a lot more confidence. She's been in the media world doing magazines. She's seen the Food Network has evolved. Like there's a thing that is being a food celebrity. And they're kind of like, hey, it sounds like it would be good to put food in your mouth. Like, it makes you seem like your food doesn't suck.
Right. Like you're human. Like you would also like to eat your food.
Yes. So she was calling more of the shots.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of the kind of thing you hear about like people in their first TV shows. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, where you just let everything kind of wash over you because you're so psyched to be on TV and you think everybody knows better. And yes. So, and they do know some things better, but what they don't know is you.
Yes.
Right. And yes. So eventually you start to sort of get control and you become more comfortable. So that's what happened to her. That's so exactly. Cool.
Yeah. And so it's a lot like the comedians that we know who have had that kind of thing happen with TV. Like it was, you know, once she had her second chance, mm-hmm. she was a much more authoritative voice in like the product that had her name on it. Right.
Right.
So
right.
She was ready to take charge and she did. And she seasons. I mean, there's like 18 seasons and then she got another show. And
then like, there's holiday spinoff. Like there's just like little guys in the midst of it all. And, because I watch her. I can't watch her for a long time, though, because I tend to just get like, because I think you're right. I think I feel a little bad for her because it doesn't like and this is not to judge her, because I think you're right on the book thing is that when you're raised with a certain amount of coldness or something like that, like your friendships are sort of up here, right? And you don't really, you're like, this is my friend, but also my coworker, or this is, you know, this is my friend, but also whatever. I work for her. And, and you wonder what it's like when they're just, the cameras aren't on. Right.
Right. And you feel like you are getting like she'll, you know, everybody self-mythologizes, of course, but she's like, the reason the show works is because these are my friends and we're having fun and it's fun and it's friends. And I'm like,
yeah,
y'all are like not talking about anything though. Like,
right. There doesn't seem to be any real conversations happening.
Yeah.
And you want it to be like, you want it to be in, I mean, even if. You know, like I go on the road with Maria Bamford and we are very good friends and we talk about a lot of very real things, but that doesn't mean that we're spooning, you know? I mean, like sometimes I would get calls from like the club going, do you know where Maria is? And I was like, well, she's not with me right now. She has her own room. But we are friends.
Yeah. I mean,
but whenever
it's cool.
She's been on this show, like when she's on the Dork Forest, we end up forgetting that we are recording and then all of a sudden like great revelation. I mean, it's one of the great things about podcasting is because you forget because you're just talking to someone you like. Like I like, by the way, I like Aaron Judge and you should find Aaron Judge everywhere.
Aw, thanks, Jackie. I like Jackie Cation.
I am Aaron Judge is what your Instagram is. The word I,
yes.
The letter I.
I-A-M.
I-A-M. Aaron Judge, Aaron with an E. You have a joint album with Jenny Chalukyan, and it's called It's Romantic Comedy, Live at the Ripped Bodice.
Yes.
And aaronjudge.com is the website, which has a link to way too much information, or as much information as you can stand. So it'll be very, very great.
More than most people can stand. More information.
Exactly.
It's like a Wikipedia. It's like a mini Wikipedia about me. But it's like 10,000 entries
by her. And so, but Erin, didn't in Ina Garten, didn't she have wasn't it in San Francisco? Didn't she have a place in San Francisco, or am I wrong?
I don't think so. She had, okay. I wonder who she has me. her specialty food store was in the Hamptons.
Okay.
And then she did episodes of her TV show. She did like a Napa season.
Okay.
And then she's like, I'm in Napa and I like am renting this house, and it looks exactly like her gorgeous house. And like, it's just like too much. And then she's like, I went to California to find white people who wear sweaters around their shoulders.
Right. There weren't enough in the Hamptons. I'd go to Napa and talk to some winos, and that'd be amazing.
And it was, it's very much like this period of time where people are like, this is called a farm and these are local produce ingredients. And this is very like 2008 to 2012 kind of vibes, like farm to table. And people were like, we really should eat seasonally and locally. And she's kind of part of that vibe. And like watching her show is like revisiting that.
Yeah.
And I remember
rediscovering real food again. That was that early 2000s thing. It was great.
Yes. Yeah. And like, you know, I think that there's still like in Ithaca for sure, there was a lot of like farm vibes. You know, you still get the farm box and you still do the like, you know, where this turkey came from. It came from 2 miles down the road. And I like that kind of stuff. It's harder to do now that I have young children. And I think that that's the other reason I've been super into Ina Garten, is because her world is devoid of children. It's just like no freaking kids anywhere. She's like, I'm putting whatever I want in this food because no one's going to say, puh, puh, puh. No one eats chicken nuggets here.
How old are your kids now? I didn't know you had another one, although I kind of knew. I saw
six
you.
And four.
Six and four. Well, that's fine. Are you done?
Oh, yes. I am retired
from childbearing.
Reproduction. There you go. And I'm having fun. Like they are old enough to be fun now.
Super cute. Yeah.
And we're partying and we're having a good time. And they, my older one, when I'm like in a bad mood, he'll like go to the TV and turn on, like we have, you know, cause my husband is a nerd. I have a PlayStation and that's where you get all of the Hulu and Disney Plus and everything. So
you have to navigate through the joystick for PlayStation.
And my six-year-old can get all the way to Ina Garten from like TV off.
That is adorable.
So he's like, Mom needs her barefoot Contessa right now. And he'll like load it up for me and then sit on the couch. And I'll be like, would you eat that? And he'll be like, no. He'll be like, she makes food look as good as it tastes. And I'm like, well, that's poetic. Would you eat that? And he's like, no.
What is she making that he won't eat?
Freaking roasted chicken, Jackie.
What?
Boiled potatoes. Not boiled, but like, you know.
But like butter, but like
butter and potatoes. Yeah.
You know,
I'm
that
like, kiddo.
Yeah. That you would love roasted chicken and potatoes with butter on them. Because you are not. I will say this. Jamie Oliver did a show once that I saw where he had a bunch of six-year-olds and he showed them what chicken McNuggets were made out of.
Yeah.
And he made the McNuggets and they were like, ew, gross. But then he made them look exactly like nuggets.
Yeah.
And he said, so would you eat these or would you like some chicken? They're like, no, the nuggets.
Yeah.
They look just like the thing that I love.
Horrified. I saw this too, Jackie. I saw the exact same thing. This was like a big thing. I remember this so distinctively because it was memorable.
Yeah.
But he was horrified. He was like, I did this in England and the kids did not eat it.
Exactly.
And I'm like, well, you have a shame culture.
Right.
This is America.
This is what you've done is you've created something that they are used to eating and made it look exactly like the thing that they like to eat.
Yes.
And they have forgotten entirely that you just ground up the backs of chickens. And
my son has asked me to take cooking lessons from McDonald's. He's like, Mom, your chicken tenders don't taste like McDonald's chicken. Can you get the recipe from McDonald's?
Well, like, allow me to get a lot of MSG and then just throw just some nonsense at you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sugar. There's sugar in those chicken nuggets.
Oh, I'm
There's
sure
also
there is.
They're deep fried in like some kind of crazy combined oil from like 8 different sources and
right, just loose extra oil.
And there's tendons in there, you know.
Yeah.
There's stuff you don't there's bits, there's
bits you should just be eating the food. Eat the food and then it was I remember someone was telling me that I remember the first time I met some friend of mine when people started having kids. And her daughter was like, I'm hungry. I want a snack. And she gave her like bell pepper strips. And I was like, how'd you do that? And she said, it's all she gets. She thinks that they're sweet. And I was like, of course she does. Cause she, and when she's 10 and she dives headfirst into a pile of sugar, it's going to be real
Garden,
different.
Right? Ina Garten grew up with no things. And now she's like dessert for two pound cakes. That's what we do.
Reach having a pound cake. Yeah. So she does make, what are your favorite recipes of hers?
So she made this seared tuna salad thing. So when I was first learning to cook, I liked going to restaurants when I was in my 20s and I was like dating my boyfriend and he had like a big boy job. So like we could go to restaurants, even though I was telling jokes. And, so raw tuna, right. Is like what you get at sushi places.
Right.
I don't know. Like, this is going to sound like a weird thing to say to somebody, but I don't know what you eat, Jackie. I don't know if you're like a foodie or if you're like a vegetarian or if you're like an I eat everything kind of person, or if you cook, like what is your food stuff?
I eat, everything. And I cook a lot of chicken. I cook a lot of roast chicken. Roast chicken is one of my dorkdoms.
Ina cooks a lot of chicken. She's like, if you know anything about me, I cook mostly chicken. I think chicken is the perfect food.
It really is the perfect food. And I had to tell my mother-in-law and because I had already told Andy when we moved in together, if you were to want something besides roast chicken, you're going to have to pipe up. Because I will make a roast chicken at least once a week. And if you would like a different meat, if you would like it prepared in a different way. And I think that an abomination before God and man is the boneless, skinless chicken breast.
Because
it doesn't have any flavor. And that's why you have to marinate it.
Yes.
If you just cooked it with the bone and skin on, it turns out it would have flavor. And then you could take the skin off and throw the bone away. If you're some sort of monster who doesn't want to eat the skin of a chicken. Anyway.
Ina is a big proponent of just what you said. There's a few things she repeats. One of them is just leave the bone in, leave the skin on, and then you can, and she like stuffs the skin. She does all kinds of stuff. But she's a chicken aficionado. And there's a few catchphrases that she has. And one of them is, Jeffrey loves chicken. If you talk to people who things she says over and over again. Another one, the biggest one is, how easy is that? So she'll do something and then she'll be like, how easy is that? And there's a few other things that
you've got the timing down.
She's
too.
Picked Very up nice. Too, where she's just like, look at that. That's fantastic. Like she'll just be holding food and she'll be like, look at this plum. Look at that. That's fantastic. And you're like, perfect. She's always, she's always jocking her own food. She's just like, look what I did. It's delicious.
I was right, you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, I've only done this 10,000 times for 300 people at a time, and it's perfect. She's just so funny, and so she makes a lot of chicken, and so. But the first thing that I ever made that she made this seared tuna, and so she seared it on both sides. She's like, and you want it raw in the middle. You want it to be red. You see, it's red right through. And I remember being like, I didn't realize you could just buy a piece of tuna at the store and like not cook it all the way.
Yeah.
I thought that the people at the restaurants who were serving mostly raw tuna had some kind of magical tuna that was like
that
sushi grade
all the way.
Right. Yeah. Like that was like blessed.
You just
somehow.
Ask for sushi grade. That's all you have to do.
Exactly. So, you can just buy it at the store. And so and then I made it and I made the dressing the way that she did with you kind of chop it up and make like almost like a tuna salad, but it's got a ton of avocado and lemon and lime juice in it. And there's a few other ingredients. And I made it for my husband and he was like, what the hell? Like, this is the best thing anyone's ever made ever. Like
right.
He was
that I
beside
sat at
himself.
The house and somebody just said, here's a bowl of this food. And because otherwise it's restaurant food. Like it to bring what? Like a pound of tuna into your own home, just sear it on both sides and then put it on top of greens and with avocado and a lime vinaigrette, possibly. Yeah. It sounds delicious.
Well, and she called it tuna rolls, which like evokes like, you know, sushi. Celery and well, yes, tuna rolls like that. But I was thinking more like, you know, like a tuna salad sandwich.
Oh,
like she, cause she put it on baguettes, right? So she opens up the baguette and she shoves the tuna salad in. She calls it tuna salad.
Tuna salad. I'm like, which is not what she, this is not, no, cause that's,
this is next
that's
level.
Can opener,
mm-hmm.
Drain, mayonnaise. Yes. Celery, of course, possibly a little green onion, jazz it up, tiniest amount of mustard. And that is a tuna salad that you, by the way, want to eat once a year.
Right.
A seared tuna sandwich is something you could eat once a week.
It was just so good. And like, this is one of the things she made for her gay male neighbors, because she's always doing charitable things like bringing millionaires food. I made you this picnic while you edit the sequel to Chicago. And they're like, oh, you didn't. And you're like, this is a nice life. This is like, nobody's sick. Nobody has cancer. Nobody needs like chicken noodle soup. Everybody is just like, oh, Ina, you really got me out of a jam. I'm entertaining the education secretary, you know, like, just like, oh my God.
It's just like, I'm overwhelmed. There's a ball in a week and a half that I have to put together different costumes for over 30 people. We're doing choreography.
People always ask me, Ina, what do you cook for a ball? Well, it's simple.
know, look suddenly, how easy this is.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. And so, no, it's how easy is that?
How easy is that? Good for you, Ina.
But I have to say, like, of all the things that I rewatched recently, I've been watching episodes and I've been watching new episodes that I hadn't seen before. And there is one where she's like, I'm cooking for children. Somebody's bringing their human children to my house and I'm going to cook for them. And it's clear she's never seen one before. She goes to this candy store. She's like, I'm going to bake a big chocolate sheet cake, because who doesn't love sheet cake? And I'm going to let kids decorate it, because that's what they like to do. Have fun. Decorate it with candy. So she goes into this candy shop. That's just, you know, amazing. Lollipops, licorice, like the whole nine, buckets and buckets and buckets of candy. She picks out the following candies for children.
Uh-oh.
Good and Plenty's.
What?
Jordan Almonds.
Jordan Almonds.
And Necco Wafers. She's like, got it. Got all the candy I need. My husband and I paused it. We're like, what? She literally found the three worst candies in existence.
There's not a child on the earth who would not be like, no, I'm good.
I think it was because she liked the color.
And right, like her decoration.
Her mother, who was so phobic of food, maybe these were the sweets she would allow. I could imagine it being something where she was like phobic of sweets herself. So she was like, I only let my kids have sweets that I would never eat myself. I was like, oh my God, she's never seen a kid in her life. And she
bring a child. They will pick the most brightly neon colored, whatever nonsense, sour gummy worms.
Sour gummy worms. Kids love those.
When the back of my glands just went up. I used to do childcare back in 2000, a long time ago. They're in their 30s, those children. I think so. Wouldn't they be? Yeah, they would have been 10, I think. They were like 7 and 9 in 2000. So, yeah, they're adults. He's a jazz musician.
Aww. You did that. Good job.
Thanks for playing. The thing about children is that they've been advertised to. But I remember Caitlin just loving just sour gummy whatevers and me going, wait, is there any sugar at this at all? She's like, right away, there's sugar. And then it's all sour. And I'm like, why is that fun? And
It just makes your jaw like ache. Just kinda, like what you just, you're just
weird. Mm. Though I will say, as a babysitter, I think that I, as a child care provider, I was a babysitter. Let me just say that because their mom was my boss and she would give me too much money and to take them places, she would pay me whatever. Right. But right. She'd be like, here's $100. They want to go to fast food.
Chuck E. Cheese. Oh,
right. Fast food. Just fast food. And she's like, I don't know which one they want to go to, but you can make them agree. And I was like, okay. And so when she left, I'd be like, where do you want to go? And he's like, I want to go to Taco Bell. And Caitlin's like, I want to go to McDonald's. And I'm like, I have a car. We can go to both because I don't care. And the longer we spend in the car driving around to different fast food places, it's a real clock eater. We get back to the house, we unpack the food, and then we only have 2 hours where I have to insist that you do your homework. How about that?
Nice.
So. Yeah, I was a good childcare provider. It was one of the things that really let me know that I didn't want them. They always cheered me up. I will say that about children.
Yes.
Is that they are so, they're a lot of work and they're a pain in the ass, but they just made me laugh.
Yes.
Just because you're like, well, look at that face.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, and they're just so pleased with so many things because they're children. And they would always cheer me up. So they'd get me out of my own head.
Yeah. I mean, the last 6-7 years of my life of mothering, parenting has been so difficult. Like I was 8 months pregnant with a 1-year-old child when COVID lockdown started.
Oh my gosh.
So I had a rough time. And like I have two boys that are exactly 2 years apart. They're very rambunctious. Like it is, my mom had an only daughter. Her parenting journey looks very different from mine.
Yes.
Right. And so like, it has just been really, really, really hard, but I have never been depressed. Like the whole rest of my life, right? Lots of things have happened. Like no matter what, good or bad, I would get depressed sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not depressed with these kids because I don't have time.
There's no time. It turns out it's not, I mean, you can name it anything you want to call it, but the old school words we used was boy energy. And there's a lot of energy.
Boy energy.
And it's hilarious. And it's, they break shit.
Oh my God. They break everything.
They're just bouncing off the walls. And you're like, I don't want to give you drugs, but I would love it if you would just sit down for just a hot sec.
They break their stuff. They break my stuff. If they haven't gotten enough activity, they're rambunctious. If they've gotten, if they're too tired, they also get hyper. And you're just like, why is that a thing?
Why is that? That should have tired you out. Yeah, you're supposed to be sleepy now.
Yeah. Nope, if they're up too late, they like start to twitch and they're like, ah. It's like, oh no.
Nope. Wrap it up.
You have a window. It's very narrow where they're like, mm-hmm, and you're like, sleep now. But I mean, okay. So it's a respite for me to watch that show because it's just such a childless
soothing
universe.
Yes.
Yes. It's soothing. There's no, like I said, the problems are like the most like, oh, this problem is that, you know, I have to entertain for 8 instead of 7. What do I do? You know, like it's just
somebody brought somebody else.
Yeah. Or like,
how will these 2-pound cakes feed them?
I don't know what to do.
She always does
this
make.
Giant, yeah. She makes way too much food, which is great. But
what's what are other recipes that you've liked? That seared tuna thing sounds amazing.
It's really good. In the same episode, she makes like a lentil soup that I made also. That's really good. She puts red wine vinegar in it right at the end. Really good tip.
That'll jazz it up. Yeah.
Her potatoes are pretty famous. She just puts them in a Dutch oven with like, without like, just like, you know, poking like the red potatoes a little bit, little tiny potatoes.
Oh, she doesn't cut them?
Doesn't cut them. And then just butter. And then like you get them in there steaming and their own juices and a little bit of butter. And she shakes it from time to time. Mm-hmm. They come out amazing. So good.
Okay.
And yeah, she's just, her recipes are extremely reliable. She tests them really, really a lot.
Are they fiddly at all or are they pretty simple?
She is determined not to be fiddly. There's a few things that she does that I technique wise do different things. Like she tends not to cook with pasta water. She tends to cook with a lot of cream. Okay. She makes like a lot of like creamy sauces and creamy. She cooks with a lot of cream. I don't cook with as much cream as all that.
Right.
But she,
you have to really like cream.
You do.
And I'm just okay. I like it. I mean, it's fine a little bit on the side. It's Andy made a Hubbard squash soup that was delicious. And he's like, it's supposed to have a little heavy cream just drizzled. And I'm like, I don't really need it. And he goes, no, display is all. And then he just put a couple of drops and it was delicious. And it didn't really change the flavor of the soup. The soup was quite lovely.
Yeah. And like, I feel like when you add too much heavy cream to things, you can't gauge when you're eating how full it's going to make you. Yeah. Like you take a couple bites and then you're like, I feel a little funny. And then like 20 minutes later, you're like, did I just eat 6,000 calories? Because like, cream is deceptive that way. Like it can really, it can really make things.
I did make
heavier.
A compound butter yesterday for the green beans for Thanksgiving. We were told to bring green beans. They're not my favorite vegetable. Mm. And Andy only likes them smothered in butter. So
yes.
What I did was I just baked a head of garlic and then I squoze it into a stick of butter and then I zested a lemon and then I mashed it all together and then I put it in the fridge and I steamed all the beans, brought it to the place we went and then nuked the butter and poured it over the green beans and tossed.
That sounds
and
great.
It was delicious. It was fine.
Yeah.
Little,
Ina cooks
I did
with a lot.
Too much.
Sorry.
Butter. It was a little too much butter.
Ina cooks with a lot of lemon zest. She'll zest a lemon into everything. Yep. And she also cooks, she'd make those green beans with like a little breadcrumbs in there.
Oh, she'd add a little breadcrumbs.
Toss it together. Yeah. She likes
for a crunch.
She likes a crunchy topping. Yeah.
Okay. Andy, and there was some talk of almond slivers. And I was like, take your almond slivers and stick them in your ear. it's my mother-in-law loved almond slivers and I can't, it's fine, but it seems like it's too much. I would rather bet bread, like tiny, like panko or something.
Yeah.
Something to add a little crunch to it is fine.
Yeah.
But I also just like beans if I'm going to eat them.
Yeah. Me too. But she makes green beans with like breadcrumbs and I think parsley. She loves parsley.
Okay.
Puts parsley in everything. And it's kind of inspiring. Like, I'm like, I should eat more parsley. So
we have parsley growing in the backyard. So I don't know what I should be using it for, but sometimes when I do need it. Clearly.
Everything. Put it on soup. Whatever soup Andy made, it would have been enhanced with parsley, according to Ina. She loves parsley.
Excellent. And then what does she do to the roast chicken?
Okay, so her roast chicken it's pretty simple. It's just lemons and garlic on the inside. So she just cuts garlic up, puts lemons inside, and she bastes it with butter before she does it. And she always trusses it. So she always ties the the legs together and tucks the wings under. And she's like perfect every time.
She does a whole chicken. Mm. Tyson.
You do like chicken.
I do love chicken. I love chicken. I love poultry. It's my favorite. And for example, we went over for someone else made the turkey. And so I made a turkey 2 days ago just because I want leftovers.
Nice.
And,
yeah.
I want there to be turkey. And so, but I have a non-existent, I'm making a calendar of chicken, roast chicken recipes. And so with different things, like my stepmother did a very basic roast chicken and she always cut it up. She did not approve of whole chicken roasting. It takes longer. You don't get as much meat off of it.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
And it's easier to cook more evenly if it's all cut up. And Nancy Cation hated cooking. So, but she would just do salt, pepper, garlic, and then little dabs of butter on it to crisp up the skin. And that's just chicken of the gods. And then if it was a special occasion, she would take bread and like a rosemary loaf or something. And she would rip it up and cook the chicken on top of it.
Yeah.
So there was chicken bread. Is what she called it.
Ooh, chicken
and
bread.
And it's just
yum.
Schmaltzy bread.
Schmaltzy
and you're
bread.
Like the most delicious. I mean, every bite is 6,000 calories. But
absolutely.
It's to die for. But I went with, I'll do a marinade sometimes. I'll do like a yogurt with a lemon zest and garlic yogurt marinade.
Very good.
With mint.
Mm-hmm.
Mint and lemon and olive oil and yogurt. and I think maybe garlic. But and then I'll do another one that is a rub marinade, which will be cumin and coriander and a little cayenne, that kind of thing. And that's more of a Middle Eastern kind of vibe. And then there's like an African thing where there's cumin and coriander, but then there's other stuff like paprika and other things going on. And so I'm always looking for a new recipe, but she's just shoving like a head of garlic and a lemon into the cavity and baking it.
That's her super standard roast chicken. She has a million chicken recipes because it's her husband's favorite food. She makes it a million different ways. I'm trying to think. There was one that she made that I didn't find so appetizing. She stuffed it with goat cheese, sun-dried tomato, and a basil leaf. And I was like, I don't know what that's going to taste like.
I mean, it's fine. But why the sun-dried tomatoes, basil, and what else?
Goat cheese.
Yeah, no cheese inside of the chicken. What are you, nuts?
And it was all tucked under the skin. And I was like, what is that going to taste like?
That is, because goat cheese doesn't have a lot of flavor. It's just fat.
Yeah.
And the chicken is already full of.
Yeah, it's like the goat cheese is like, goat milk doesn't have very much fat in it. That's why when you get goat yogurt, it's not thick. Like, it's thickened with like seaweed.
Oh, interesting.
Because I had to be off dairy when I was pregnant and when I was breastfeeding. And so I like learned a lot about like other dairy besides cow dairy.
Right.
So I had to, I was like, sheep yogurt is real because sheep milk is like 12% milk fat. Goat milk is like naturally like 4% fat. Like, it's very hard to get anything really rich out of goat milk. And so goat cheese is kind of crumbly and like it, but it is dry and it's like, it doesn't have like, you know, it's not like putting cheddar under there or something that's going to melt and like get all into it, you know?
I don't approve of putting cheddar under it. Wouldn't it be weird? All cheddar cheese, cheese and chicken. I mean, it's fine when, I guess, there's chicken parmesan that people enjoy a great deal where there's cheese and tomato sauce. And
yeah, but that's not tucked under the skin. You're right. I've never seen anybody stuff a chicken with cheddar cheese, but I feel like somebody's got to do it. I feel like there's got to be like chicken cordon bleu. What is chicken cordon bleu? Does not have chicken. Blue cheese. Doesn't have cheese underneath the skin, though. Yeah.
Right. And blue cheese is sort of like a moldy kind of, it's fermented. So it's got a lot of flavor and a lot of sort of energy, not energy, but like a lot of, it's distinct.
Yeah. I don't know what Ina's like, she's like French, she's not French trained.
Right.
But she's like, okay, cordon bleu is a dish of meat wrapped around cheese, then breaded and pan fried and deep fried.
Meat. Okay. So it's boneless chicken breast is what they've done
roulade.
To it.
It's a roulade.
And they just, they pound it and then they wrap it because they've removed the skin and bones.
And then they put,
I mean, I get it. If you're a chef, you want to mix it up.
Yeah. You're bored.
But if you're a person who's just trying to eat some food, you're just going to make a chicken and you're going to enjoy that chicken in my opinion.
I make chicken for my kids, like pretty standard way. They're going to have to learn to like it because they ate it before they started eating McDonald's and other sort of foods more regularly. They ate it all the time.
Yep.
They liked it a lot. And then suddenly they were exposed to like, you know, fried and like flavor, like intoxicating flavor chemistry and
became food converted. Science.
Yes.
Yes. You're like, it's not food science night. It's just food night. How about that?
Exactly.
Okay. Hey, it's almost at an hour. Let me just tell people that I am talking with Aaron Judge. It's IAM Aaron Judge. It'll be in the notes, Instagram and all that stuff. AaronJudge.com has links to all the different social medias. The album that she's doing joint with Jenny Chalukyan is called It's Romantic Comedy, Live at the Ripped Bodice. And thank you so much for doing the show. This has been super fun.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad I got to learn about your own cooking habits and your love of poultry.
Oh, and Rangers, you have definitely known about my love of poultry and my cooking habits because we're 1,000 episodes in. Anyway, and Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
It was super fun. It was with Aaron Judge, who is a comic here in Los Angeles, and she and Jenny Chalukyan have a show at the Ripped Bodice, which is the brick and mortar romance show, bookstore down Culver City.
Oh, yeah.
And so their joint album is called It's Romantic Comedy. Colon, live at the Ripped Bodice. The word colon is not in there. That's actually just denotes some punctuation. Yes. But Aaron Judge's dorkdom was Ina Garten, who I always think is Ina Garten. But it's Ina Garten.
Okay.
And she just read her memoir. She's watched all of her shows. We talked.
There's a lot of them.
It was so funny. One of the things that's soothing to her that made me laugh a lot was that she said, Ina Garten is constantly saving people's lives by bringing millionaires some food. They're like, thank goodness you've come. I'm swamped. And it's always some friend of hers who's got to like put on a ball or
some troubles. They're having some trouble.
Some troubles. They're like, oh my God, I'm slightly overwhelmed. I have to make 20 costumes for a children's event or, you know, I mean, something very beautiful.
Something very lovely.
Not anything real. Nobody having a real problem to. And then I also found out that Jeffrey, her beloved husband, for decades, maybe, or just years, whatever, his job has been to be the head of the economics department, business department at Yale.
Business or economics?
Yes, it's something like that. I can't remember which. I'm so sorry. Okay. I think it's the business department, but but at Yale University. Right. And I thought, well, that really parses pretty. I mean, that actually feels solid that because he looks like that guy. So, yeah. He's got
elbow patches?
Maybe, very possible. and then we talked about several of his her catchphrases. So it was very, very, it was a very fun
episode.
Oh, does
she have catchphrases?
Ina Garten does. And it's, she's constantly saying something like,
how does she enter the room?
Wasn't that simple? Wasn't that simple?
Wasn't that
simple? Or wasn't that easy? Or
wasn't that easy?
Something like that. And, but she also, I asked what Aaron's favorite recipe was offhand, and she came up with this seared tuna salad that sounds, and it's sort of like tuna salad.
I'm listening.
Tuna salad, but not tuna salad. Like not canned tuna
but
salad.
Seared salmon?
Seared tuna.
A seared tuna.
Like an actual piece of tuna that you sear on both sides, and then you make a sandwich out of it. Mm. Like tuna salad, because you chop it.
Chop it up, sure.
But it's like sushi-grade tuna. Yeah, don't have to douse it because you've purchased $27 worth of tuna. But, you know, very Soylent Green where you show up with a small piece of tuna that you've seared on both sides.
Right.
But it did sound delicious.
It does sound delicious. Yeah, you can make that anytime you want.
Okay, I might do that.
I wonder if you can sear a can of tuna.
Yes, especially if it's packed in oil.
on the stovetop.
You can light it on fire. Whoosh.
Ooh, flambé.
Flambé. You could eat canned tuna flambé. Why do we have to ruin Ina Garten's beautiful foods? We also talked about how she's constantly making, she's like, I'm going to make dessert for Jeffrey and I. First of all, we're going to make 2-pound cakes. What? Why are there 2 giant pound cakes? I guess her childhood was full of her parents were not particularly they were a little tight.
Oh,
emotionally.
Oh,
and so her mother there was no candies, there was no sugar, there was no nothing, and it only is reflected in one episode that Aaron Judge actually told me about.
Emotional love is
without
sugar?
Food. Without food. Like the food was always terrible.
Oh, I see.
And so yeah, there was.
That will inspire some cooking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to chop, chop. I'm going to dash off and pile into a, jump into a pile of chow.
That's right.
But it's a great episode. And she got weird candy to do. She's like, I'm going to make a sheet cake for children, which Erin was like, clearly she doesn't know anything about children. She's like, everyone loves sheet cake. And I'm going to let the kids decorate it with candy. And so she goes into this candy store that's gorgeous. It has every candy you could ever want.
Wow.
And she got like Necco wafers. She got like weird adult candy.
Right.
That was, she was like, I take it you didn't have candy as a child. Like
cheesecake with Necco wafers.
Sheet cake. It was sheet cake.
Oh, sheet cake. Oh, sorry.
Necco wafers and black licorice. I mean, like literally she picked the lamest
Stuff that kids don't want.
Ever.
Right.
Get the shiniest sour gummy worm that you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
And watch them lose their minds.
Or toasted coconut and licorice. And
Jordan almonds. That was the other thing.
Jordan almonds. Right. Adult candy. Difficult candy. We're now in the difficult listening to difficult candy.
It was a great episode. I recommend everyone listen to it. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?